The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Sissoko finally waited. Eriksen low. Great ball into the middle. What a save by Heaton. Tonight's Davison Sanchez, Lucas Moura. And belted into the net. Brilliant goal. On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. Oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London! That is absolutely incredible on debut! Aurier! What a finish for 3-2 from Serge Aurier!
First time here to Son. Kane, good area for Spurs, and Kane's not afraid to shoot. Wow, what a goal, Harry Kane! That is exceptional. Lamella will try and place it. Wonderfully taken by Eric Lamella. Never afraid to take on a shot, and with good reason. Terry in the Burnley back line, and Son breaks forward. Oh wow, what a run! Heung-min Son from inside his own half has scored one of the best goals of his Spurs career.
And not so good evening. Welcome to another New Spurs Order podcast. Under the Touchline Frackabana, I'll be your host tonight, Owen, aka X-Back, and I'll be joined tonight by none other than Booker T, aka Tops. How you doing, man? How was the holiday?
Holiday was good, bro. It was a nice way to celebrate my birthday. Bit of time away, so can't really complain, bro. Came back to a litany of Tottenham games at home, and happy to be back on the pod. It's been a little while since I've been on, so always good.
And happy to have you as well. And we've got a couple of games to go across, even though one feels like it was a while ago. So we had a game at home against Newcastle in the league, and this followed a couple of weird results on the weekend as well. It's like teams around us were dropping points. So it looked like a really good opportunity to get 3 points again at home against the Newcastle side, which hadn't lost since Anfield. And they conceded a 97th minute goal, but they've been a solid side, kind of trailing along. But me and Yao on last week's pod, we both predicted a 3-1 win. We were both pretty confident going into it. Lineups were announced. Obviously, he was rotating players for the Sporting game.
Yeah.
And we were looking to see Skip back, which was positive for me. Sanchez came in for Romero, who apparently had a knock. And Emerson came back from suspension. Obviously, Wijnaldum in the stadium. And the lineups were announced. How did you feel confidence wise going into that?
I'm trying not to take too much from the lineups these days, to be honest, just because generally they don't tend to change that much in terms of personnel and also in terms of like how we set up. But obviously, going into the game without Romero, weirdly without Højbjerg, against what would look like an in-form Newcastle side on the rise, full of confidence, unbeaten since September. I just kind of thought we should have enough to beat them at home. They were missing some key players and there were talks about other key players not being available, like Joe Linton and Bruno. But lo and behold, come match day, they were available. And actually, I actually kept saying to people before the game that I thought it was going to be a win because I remember us playing them last season and actually they had a few different players but they had actually more of their key players there, Saint-Maximin and a few others. And we spanked them 5-1, like literally spanked them. So in my head, I thought, it's probably going to be tight, but it should be enough to get the result. And how little did I know?
You didn't. To be fair, obviously not how the game ended, but we did actually start this game quite well. I thought I pressed high, let's get the ball forward. Skip was actually really positive with some drilled vertical passes, which found their man a couple of times. And we created some decent chances. And obviously, Sun went 1v1. And it was unfortunate. He tried to dink Nick Pope. Couldn't quite pull it off. And what proceeded after that was a little bit against the run of play, I thought, as well. See, Lloris made the mistakes he did. The first mate, obviously, we know what happened after that, but how did you feel the first half was actually going up until like that Lloris first mistake, anyway?
Yeah, I felt like the first half, or the first part of the first half, we actually started fairly positive, fairly brightly. If I'm honest with you, we created some opportunities. I think in that first half in total, we must have had maybe 10 or 11 shots. We actually were really kind of kept them camped in that sort of in their half. And I don't know. I personally feel that Sun should have done better with that opportunity. I felt that he actually didn't take that opportunity seriously enough, which is why he tried to dink it. But to me, I find that sort of, I don't know, in my head, I find it silly, because this is a man who's looking for confidence. Wouldn't you just put your foot through it, or chip it with more conviction instead of trying something that's quite a low percentage finish? I don't know. That's just how I saw it.
It's a mad one. And so Jay was saying, like, yeah, he's tired of the serial winner football. So I think we were playing good football, and I think we do play good football just when we're playing well. It's just a case of like when a couple people or a couple of players don't start well, then we can't get into a rhythm, and we can't get into the patterns and the automations quickly enough, and subsequently we end up getting pegged back. Pause. But yeah, sorry, you were going to say.
Yeah, and I don't know, man, like, Lloris, God, I just can't seem to put my finger on why this guy has these odd games where he just loses the plot, man. Like, I don't know, if I'm honest with you as well, I had a bit of an issue with just the way our back sort of four. So the back three and Lloris. I felt that, like, firstly, Lloris's kicking was completely off. I felt that, like, for some weird reason, it didn't seem like he was commanding the back three as well as he could have. He wasn't making a decision quickly enough when we were starting from goal kicks, whether he wanted to kick it long or whether we wanted to play from the back. I felt like his communication with Dyer wasn't, like, great, where Dyer almost conceded an own goal from like 15 yards.
Yeah.
We all know the problems that we have on that right side with Emerson and Davinson Sanchez, which honestly at this point feels like self-harm from Conte when he plays those guys. Dyer wasn't particularly confident. You could see that every time he got on the ball, he delayed, wouldn't make the right pass, wouldn't make a quality enough pass. It just felt like, nothing really in that first half went well. And what's so frustrating about it is that I don't think there was enough in that half for Newcastle to go into that half thinking they deserve to be 2-0 up. They, in my opinion, and I know we spoke about it in the group a lot, we debated it, you know, in the group, I just felt that they were opportunistic. You know, they were very clinical. They were able to take the two chances or the two mistakes that we basically offered up to them, and they basically turned that against us. In the stadium, when I first saw the first goal, I initially thought it was a foul, because I kind of think in this league that the league is really good at protecting the goalkeepers. But actually, when I look back on it, and then when I watched it on the replays and then the highlights, Lloris should have just cleared it. I don't know why he almost felt that like he had to control it. Why not just put your foot through it first time, you know? And obviously, like, Wilson had the speed of mind to basically turn it around and chip. I mean, again, this is all hindsight, but I kind of felt like the minute Lloris was out of control of that, I kind of felt that Dier maybe could have had a, like, his mind quickly moved so that he could fall back onto the line. But again, the finish was like kind of a clever finish from Wilson. And then the second goal as well, it's just difficult. You know, another poor kick from Lloris. Contested, lost, contested by Cesc. He got beaten by Miguel Almirón. And he's
let's go through it though, because why was he even trying to hit that? Like, I didn't feel like that pass was ever even on. I felt like Almirón was pretty much on him anyway.
Exactly. It was a very poor percentage pass. It was a pass that, like, I don't know, from a football perspective, when I watch stuff like that, I think if you're going to make that pass, I would absolutely always prefer that you overhit that pass than underhit. Because if you underhit that pass, you're putting your team under pressure. So it has to either be perfect or overhit. The minute you underhit and you lose that ball, you're going to put yourself under pressure, which we did. 50-50 was lost. He's gone past Cesc. He now comes one-on-one up against Longley. Longley's position, again, Longley's body position, and you know, he's almost too flat on Almirón as Almiron's coming in at an angle. Mm. And Almirón just, like, it, honestly, it looks like with ease just blows past this guy. He's got a finish. He's on his left foot, opens up his body. Lloris comes out too slowly, slips it under him. 2-0. Like, two goals, in my opinion, that are just mistakes. And, you know, it's silly as well, because I used to feel that that's how we used to give a lot of our goals away in previous teams, previous seasons. And I felt in the last sort of year or so that we've not really been a team that gives away mistakes. But for some reason, we gave up these two. Newcastle were clinical. And honestly, ever since that point, you know, the crowd, especially in the South Stand, just got on their backs and went into a half ringing of boos, which was
were you booing as well?
No, I'm not one of these. I won't ever.
Fair enough. It was quite annoying to watch. Like, I didn't initially watch the second half either. I had to turn around and watch it back. But yeah, that second mistake for Lloris, like, for me, you've got two choices. If you're a poor kicker, which you are, you're a poor kicker, right? So you've got Longley literally standing right on you in biology. He's very, very comfortable on the ball. The team's playing well. We've actually got a three-man midfield as well who can pick up the ball. We got options once we move the ball out from Longley. We actually tend to be quite comfortable playing out from the back as long as we avoid that right-hand side. Either use Longley or just try and hit it long to Kane. Just try and hit a vertical ball long to Kane. Like, as you say, when you under-hit a pass like that in that area and the ball gets turned over in your half, that's it. They're basically on your goal. Like, they could quite easily have, like, a 4-on-3 quite easily because, you know, no one else is back yet. So
that's it. And generally, most Premiership teams, they've got enough quality. Like, it's the Premier League. They've got enough quality to be able to be clinical or to be at least to be opportunistic enough that if you give up that opportunity to them, they're going to take it. You know, like, I don't know, man. I know he's a loyal servant, bro. But we need to have that conversation again, bro.
Well, I think for quite a while, I think fans have been wanting a contingency plan for Lloris. Signing a young keeper, hoping to kind of bring him through gradually, just like we did when Lloris initially came in for Brad Friedel.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been players in the market, and we've not really pounced. Apparently, we were regretting not going in for Banzunu of Southampton. You went Ariola, who went to West Ham on a permanent deal. I think it was this summer. if not summer before, because Fabianski, I think he's Lloris's age, if not there or thereabouts. And mm-hmm. they've got a succession plan. You got someone like Areola, who's, I think he's very good. And if he's willing to be a backup at West Ham and a rotation to be kind of brought in slowly at West Ham, he would have been able to at Spurs. I know he's on high wages though, but yeah, even so, that could have been an option for us. But whatever name there seems to be, I know Oblak's been thrown around. We don't seem to have like a good plan for that position. Hopefully I'm wrong, and by this time next year, we'll have like a good contingency plan for Lloris. But as it stands, it just doesn't seem to be a priority position.
Which,
I feel like Fraser-Foster was a good signing though, but bless him, he just hasn't played a game yet.
You know, he's not even been given a sniff, not even been given an opportunity. I suppose with the games running thick and fast, goalkeepers don't tend to be rotated as much. And we've not really had any cup games apart from the Champions League. So, yeah, it's a strange one. It's a strange one. I like Lloris. I like Lloris. You know, he has some of his indiscretions over the years, has some of his bozo moments, you could say. But I don't know, man. I just get the feeling that we're coming to an end now with him.
Yeah. Like, he's always had these things in him. It was coming off a really good performance against Manchester United as well. It's just a shame. It's just a shame. He had an awkward moment against Sporting as well, but we'll get into it.
God.
To round up the game though, second half starts, we started quite well, nice and intense, and essentially woke up a bit, as you'd expect a team 2-0 down at home to do though, to be honest. Got a goal through a set piece.
Yeah,
I think it was Longley that flicked it on, Kane header, boom. See, now we're in crunch time, we're still pushing for a goal. How did you feel like that second half ultimately played out?
Oh, we went out without whimper. We created jack shit in that second half. When I think about it, we were at home trying to get back into a game that we were losing, and I really couldn't think of any clear, obvious chances. Like, fine, Newcastle were a smart team. They set up tactically. They had two banks of four, very happy to just hit us on the break when they had the opportunity to, and they wasted time. But if we're really honest about it, what clear-cut opportunities did we create in that game? How many times did we really put their defence under any real pressure? How many times did I see Botman or Dan Byrne or Trippier on the run or on the turn? I didn't. It was, in my opinion, it wasn't a very good second half. And to be honest with you, we went out without a whimper, which is a bit of a shame because we have gone unbeaten at home this season up to this point. And I felt this was a very winnable game. But the problem as well you have is that we have players who are out of form. We're playing in like different systems with players who are coming back, players who are not used to the system. And obviously, it's kind of clear as well that sometimes in these systems, the players are just extremely rigid. You know, some of them, it needs to be absolutely perfect for some of it to work. I thought, in my opinion, the midfield balance was perfect at the weekend against Newcastle. And the reason I say that is because I've always advocated that we have lots of different types of profiles in our midfield. I felt that in Bentancur, we had a dribbler, or someone who's very happy to be on the ball, very happy to move with the ball. We had a ball winner in Bissouma and sort of Skip, but then Skip was kind of on the right side as a, almost like a box-to-box, almost like a runner. And that was someone who was basically adding as a third man to the 3-5-2, but also operating on that right-hand side, stretching them, which I think he did really well in the first half. And I actually felt for the three of them, they did okay. I think Bentancur has been kind of a good player for us, despite the results and the performances. I thought Bissouma was poor at times, but he got into it. He was getting on the ball, opening up play, you know, doing the good stuff, like, but obviously he's still clearly learning the system. He's clearly still learning how Conte wants to play. And he had Skip, who, you know, for a player who hadn't started for such a long time, after what, 8-9 months out, he ran his socks off, put challenges in, won the ball high up the pitch, stretched the defence when he had the opportunity to. So I kind of felt that our midfield was actually better than theirs. But then I look at the other two parts of the team, our defence, I just thought, just didn't create anything enough. I thought that, like, we were poor in possession. I felt that we didn't engage enough when they actually had attacks. And the one thing about our team that I really struggle with at the moment is our ability, is our inability to automate. I've said it in the group a number of times. How many times did we move it amongst the back four freely? The minute any pass was kind of made to break a line, to get from defence to attack, from defence to midfield, passes from Dyer, passes from Longley, passes from Emerson, every single one just broke down. We weren't able to break any lines, especially in that second half. And obviously as well, in attack, we're finding it very difficult to obviously bridge that gap between the ball in defence and getting it to Kane and Son. And the minute those two get it, they're already flooded and they can't really have any impact on the game. So, I don't know. It was a difficult one to take, but in my opinion, that second half was a poor half. I'm sorry. We can say there were some positives and we gave it our all, but I just felt for a team at home against, in my opinion, an inferior Newcastle side, we should at least be, you know, going out fighting instead of going out with a whimper.
That was actually a very, very, very good summary. And yeah, I agree. Our inability to create as well is really, really poor. Like, we just without Kulusevski, we don't know that we can do anything, really. And I was critical of Conte's in-game management on the day, but I'm looking back now and I've obviously just remembered he brought on Perisic on the hour, brought on Lucas Moura shortly afterwards to add another attacker. So I was like, okay, that's actually not bad on paper. And then you could still see we weren't creating anything. You've got players like Spence on the bench who could come on and add some thrust to that right-hand side, or even Doherty, like, I wouldn't have hated, but bring him on sooner than the 80th minute, surely. And yeah, it was just like he almost accepted defeat. Like, I don't know. Like, how would you rate Conte's in-game management for that game? Just out of 10 on a quick one.
For that game, Conte's in-game management. So in that game, let me just think. He made 4 substitutions.
That's right. Yeah. Perisic, so Moura, then Doherty and Davis. Doherty and Davis come on in the 80th.
Again, this is what I'm. This is one of the things that gets me. Is like, you're trying to win a game and you bring on defenders. No, it's a straight 4. 4 out of 10. Yeah, rubbish. Yeah.
Fair enough.
4 out of 10. I mean, you, like, there's attackers literally on the bench. You don't bring them on trying to win a game. You bring on defenders. Yeah, it's not on. Tottenham at home, come on, man.
I wouldn't mind it if he brought on some attackers as well. I see what he's trying to do. If you add energy to your back line, you can get higher at the pitch.
Exactly.
In theory, but it's, yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't add much to our chance creation.
Small, you know, small comparison. I know it might not be the same, different opposition. Look at what it was like when he had more attackers on against Sporting. A completely different second half, you know?
Correct. All right, yeah, I'll agree with that summary of Conte's in-game management, and we'll use that as a lovely segue to the Sporting game. So we had Højbjerg and Romero return for this. Lucas Moura started in the attack, so he went back to a 3-4-3, which we just have been more comfortable in this season. And it looked like, again, like, I was confident going into the game as well, and especially when I saw the lineup. It's, again, another winnable team, a team where we had a fair bit of joy when we were playing at their grounds, but we kind of shot ourselves in the foot. It's like, okay, if, as long as we don't do that again at home, we should be all right. But no, how are you going into that game?
I was going into it positive again, you know, like, I don't know, sometimes I honestly don't know why I keep doing this to myself at this point, managed to get a ticket, thanks to Tobes last minute, and went to the stadium thinking, okay, the team looks okay. This is a must win game, Champions League game at home, should just get the win and shoot ourselves into the next round. Again, looking at the team on paper, it should be a team good enough to be able to beat this lot. First half, I have no idea what I was forced to watch. Like,
I thought
no
the
idea.
First 10, 15 minutes were okay. It was weird. Like, we actually looked to press higher. It looked like we were pressing with like a front four, Perisic joining the front three. And we looked quite intense. We actually created quite a lot, a few openings as well. Like,
yeah, in
that, watching
in that
it
first
back,
time.
And I was like, oh, okay, we actually created this, this, and this all within like the first 15 minutes. Okay, maybe it wasn't quite as bad of a start as people make out, but then we have Ghost of the Past end up popping up with a little moment. It's a guy who we've actually pined for, well, I've personally pined for a bit since we started this podcast, and I still remember really wanting him to come in for Eric Lamella and getting stick for it. And yeah, just seeing how his career's panned out now is quite hard to see, and especially the goal he scored. I felt like that made us retreat into a shell after Edwards' goal.
Yeah,
how did you see it?
It was a difficult one, like you said. I mean, the first half in general, I don't think was a great half. But you're right. You know, we did start the first half positively. You know, almost on the front foot. Got into some nice areas, caused some problems in their box. But again, you know, the minute teams almost start to get on the ball, as the minute they start to get a bit comfortable, they start to find pockets of space, like they were able to find Edwards. You know, we now have a player who we know of his quality. We literally know of his quality. We start seeing some of our players backing away, offering him space, and a very well placed shot into the left hand corner, which kind of shut the stadium up a little bit. And I think
that touch he did past Højbjerg as well was actually nasty.
It was so in my head I was like, okay, you know, we've started well and this is just a one-off chance. They did have a couple of chances that I thought, okay, they could have easily been turned into goals, but I still felt that like we could really get into it. And then I don't know, that's that end of that first half, it somewhat just petered out. We didn't look decisive. We were slow in our build up, you know. And I think I'm starting to see this more and more when I go to games as well. Is that like the minute the fans can sense us getting into this slowish sort of rhythm, slowish sort of way of building up play, and you know, when it gets to the final third, like simple passes not being made, or bad combinations, or poor like final balls, I really do feel it. You can just hear it and you can feel it amongst the fans, and it weirdly just translates to the players. It makes them more, it seems to make them more nervous, and we start giving away silly fouls. And I just felt like yesterday, to start with, after that goal, we didn't really make it any easier for ourselves. And again, we went into halftime losing. And again, the boos rang out throughout the stadium. So it was just about coming out and starting the second half strongly.
Yeah, it's Ian. Sorry, man. I'll see you there. Happy birthday to your wife, and obviously happy anniversary on Saturday. Yeah, that second half, much better. much better. I see the energy came right back. Bentancur just took the game by the scruff of the neck, to be honest. Like, everything he was doing in that second half for me was just coming off, whether he was just carrying it. Drill passes in between the lines. Like, he was winning the ball off Sporting as well. Like, it was an all-round great performance from him, and him just helping drive the team forward. We were sustaining pressure, but again, like Newcastle, we didn't look like we were going to create anything outside of a set piece.
Yeah, it was... Do you know what? Like, see, this is one of the things as well that, like, annoys me a little bit about Conte. And it's also a little bit stubbornness that I see in him sometimes. I feel like we all know that, you know, his game, a lot of it is based on the automation, the use of the fullbacks. And it's so clear that, like, the fullbacks have such a key role, even in as much as pulling defenders away, keeping the pitch wide and opening up spaces in channels or in the middle or even at the back post for players to be able to take opportunities, which, in my opinion, it just feels that, like, the players who play in these positions have to basically be near on perfect. And it's just so obviously clear that, like, we don't have players who literally are even close to this. So effectively, we're playing with players who are just functional wing-backs, you know, players who might get the opportunity, maybe with an overload, maybe with a piece of skill, or even just pure athleticism. But we're not getting that. You know, Doherty, as much as he tries, doesn't have the quality to be able to get in these right areas, you know, it doesn't have the off the dribble package, doesn't have the, you know, the one-on-one package. You're looking at the left side, you're looking at Cesc, you're looking at Perisic. Perisic has actually got quite a good final ball, but does he get out there often enough? Can he beat his man as often as he once could? I just don't know. So you find that, like you said, Benten was on the ball a lot. He was buzzing around everywhere, getting on the ball, recycling in it, moving it out wide quickly, even finding these little intricate passes into the middle towards Lucas, towards Kane, towards Son. But then you find as well that, like, the minute you get to the flanks, unless the fullback has the beating of the other fullback, he can either put in a ball in, and that ball is really a 50-50 ball, or he could start again. And then we can start the automation again, start moving the ball amongst the midfielders, amongst the defenders. And I just felt that, like, the one positive thing about the second half that I actually liked was the intensity. And this is where I feel that, like, we have actually been really missing this in this sort of period of the season. What we call this, like, this is like what the, like, maybe the, we're just coming to, like, the end of the first quarter of the season, or however you want to call it, or maybe the beginning of the second quarter of the season. We've lacked a severe amount of intensity. We really have. We haven't put teams under pressure. Teams have come to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and in my opinion, they've had a jolly up.
Is that a confidence thing, do you think? To be playing as a team, to drop into the position needed to receive the ball quick enough to play the passes
I think if you were going to say that, you would be like, fine, you could accept that if there were lots of players from different systems. But Owen, let's be honest, this is largely a lot of the guys who played last season, players who have been training and playing under Conte for some time now, who know a lot of his systems, who know the patterns, who know exactly how we played when we played well. I just feel that there's just been a severe lack of quality. Maybe some people could say, you could turn around and say that the formation does look a bit rigid and actually the execution has been poor. Fine. But I just don't feel that we have a great base of technical skill at the moment. And I think that's really, really hampering us. But the one thing I did see in that second half was intensity. And it's amazing what a little bit of intensity, a little bit of, and I hate to sound generic and, like, you know, cliche, but a little bit of hard running, hard pressing, hard tackling You know, it's amazing what that can do for a team, especially because there were parts in that second half where the full 11 of Sporting were camped. They were camped. They couldn't get out. They were really looking for opportunities to get out. And we were so insistent on winning the ball back in our third, in the middle third, in their third, and then turning them around. And we did that lots in the second half. So I just feel that that's something that Conte should maybe look at and be like, you know what? This is how we really should be playing, especially when we're at home. And obviously, fine, we got the first goal from a set piece, which is also good because, you know, again, there was a time in our, you know, in our history, our recent history, where we never scored from set pieces. So actually, I'm happy that we're scoring more from set pieces. But there were also lots of opportunities on goal. Bentancur had opportunity. Kane had an opportunity. Son had an opportunity. You know, there were lots of shots on goal. Lots
Eric
of crosses.
Dyer.
Eric Dyer had an opportunity. You know, there were lots of chances. So this is the kind of like half that I think Conte should be looking at, even isolating and saying, listen, guys, this is kind of how I need to see you guys playing more often. This is kind of how I need us to kind of a performance or somewhat of a like a portion of a game that I want you guys to be able to replicate, especially when we're at home anyway. I don't know.
I think he's going to think it's too risky. Not that I would agree with that, but obviously in that second half as well, like you say, like we did have them camped, but at the same time, they had two great chances to score.
They
in
absolutely
that second
did.
Half. One of them, they missed an open goal after Lloris came out, and he was nowhere near the ball either.
I don't know.
Came out to one of their long balls after someone spanning behind. I think that player was actually offside anyway, so I'll let him get away with that. But yeah, we gave up two like clear chances for
we
them.
Did.
But yeah. Blessing they couldn't score it, but eventually the pressure told, and it was a good. I can't remember who put in the corner out of Perisic or some, but it was right on Bentancur's head, and there were so many players underneath this Bentancur header. That Sebastian Quartes was jumping with like three people, and he just decided not to jump for some reason. And then
when I first saw it,
I actually got nowhere near it.
I thought that it was a foul, but then I was like, wait a second, there were loads of Sporting players around the goalkeeper. There's no way it could have been.
You always think that though as well. Like I thought it was going to get ruled out, even though I knew like that no one fouled the keeper, but it's just one of those in the continental game, European game, and the keeper goes down and someone scores, like more than not, they give
it's a foul. Given as a foul.
Obstruction, foul, whatever. But no, they let that one stand though. So that was nice. That was nice. And that was the correct decision as well, in my humble, unbiased opinion. but obviously, then we pressure told. Like I thought, Conte managed the game quite well, made the stops at the right time as well. Brian Hill had a pretty good cameo. We say came on the 70th minute.
Yeah,
I know chronologically, I've just gone back like 10.
No. Well, like I think it's
the fluid here.
You know, someone who, you know, who we all label as being extremely brittle and made of...
I think the first minute, he ended up slipping over himself. Here we go.
someone who looks like he's made of plasterboard, but he really... I mean, he was the epitome of the intensity most of that second half. After he came on, he, you know, was really happy to get onto the ball. He was committing players. He was taking the ball in really dangerous areas and... you know, he was even drawing fouls. Like, I just thought he just looked miles better than Lucas, or his contribution was miles better than what Lucas had. I don't know, maybe because Lucas had just started first game in a while, but Lucas just gassed out after about 60 minutes. Like, I was watching
him. I thought
him,
he like... had an okay game as well. I almost hate to say it. I thought he was okay.
Yeah, I felt like he did.
Not
but then I...
Great, but
honestly, when it got to about the 60-minute mark, I was watching him, like, just watching him personally. And he just... There was no running. I was watching him thinking, is he going to try and stretch them? Because, you know, he normally, you know, he provides us with what we call chaos ball, get on the ball, draw a few players in with a few dribbles. Wasn't even doing that. Which kind of gave me the indication that he was gassed. I thought he would come off But then he took Doherty off and put him at a right wing back. So I thought, okay, that's interesting. And even then as well, he didn't last much longer. To which Emerson came on, and then Brian Hill obviously came on as well. And Brian Hill, like, I actually think he did enough, in my opinion, to maybe even like harbour a start on the weekend against Bournemouth. I just felt like he was really positive in his play, and like I think the fans seem to get behind him as well. But again,
I think
that's
another cliche thing as well, isn't it? I almost hate to be like this as well sometimes, because it's just not something we tend to do in the pod often, like certain cliches. But when you've got someone who you're bringing on who the fans ultimately back, you're going to get the fans not booing. You're going to get them being behind the team much, much more. Mm-hmm. Like obviously, at the end of the first half, that was the complete opposite. But that's a way to lift the mood. That's a way to lift the stadium and obviously help bring in some creativity into the game.
Yeah, I mean, again, as well, like he's kind of this unorthodox sort of very one-footed, high-volume dribbler who likes to operate, like, usually on the right side. And then he was very happy to come in. But I don't know, I just felt that right-hand side, that channel that he took up with Emerson, he very much made that his own when he came on. Like, even some of his passing, I thought, was really, really good, really, really incisive. He made a really couple long cross-field sort of passes, which, when I think about it, like, we're really missing a player who can make these lofted crossfield passes just to open up the play. We don't seem to have that really at the moment. And it was kind of like refreshing to see that. I know he's young and obviously, you know, the guy's made of basically nothing. But I've always said it. I feel like there's a player there. I feel like there's a player there who just needs to get a bit more game time. I feel like at this point, we should be campaigning to just free Lucas from his contractual obligations at Spurs. I just don't see any positive in us continually playing Lucas in areas that he's either not comfortable or he just can't provide us enough quality in.
Well, he's just not enough.
I just don't think he's good enough. I really hate to say it, but at this point, I don't know. Yeah, it just was a difficult one. And obviously, the good thing as well about even Brian Hill coming on was that I felt that we stretched the play quite well. I really do feel like by the end of the game, we were literally pulling them from left to right, left to right, left to right. And effectively, from the left-hand side, an in-swinging cross is what basically led to what we thought would be.
Yeah, like I've already seen Hill's decision making start to mature slightly. Whereas when he made his first cameo in the Champions League, he looked like he was treating the ball a bit like a hot potato, like he was almost wanted to just get rid of it straight away and then make a run off. But he's making the right decisions: when to dribble, when to pass, how to. Like his passing is actually quite decent. Like as you touched upon his switch of play, like it didn't have necessarily that much zip, but it had enough and. It was obviously the right decision at the time to stretch Sporting, and it's good for him as well because this right hand side position is still quite new to him. Mm-hmm. He's already come out and said like he prefers playing on the left. He predominantly played on the left when he was at Sevilla, and when he made his when he got minutes for us, he would always be on the left. So yeah, he's. He's doing relatively well in that position so far. Well, we'll see if he does get a start against Bournemouth. We'll get onto that game very, very shortly. But of course, now we've got to go over a certain VAR decision where we managed to score pretty much with the last kick of the game.
It was the last kick of the game
where cross comes over to Emerson. He heads it down to Kane and he starts it in. What was going on in the stadium during that check? Like, did they show anything? What was the mood like? Like, did anyone expect it to be even chalked off? Because like, you've probably been tempted to pitch invade after that goal went into having that moment of despair.
There was just in that south stand, So it was utter chaos. It was just chaos. Like, everybody lost the plot. Even the players, even Richarlison, who obviously, you could see everyone just lost the plot. And when they huddled around the ref, I remember Yao saying to me, this might get chalked off. And we were in the standing area in the south stand, and he just sat down and like kind of just was like, this might get chalked off. And I was just thinking, let me think about it. Like, when the ball came over, where was Emerson? Where was Kane? I was even thinking that it actually didn't even go directly from Emerson to Kane. Where was Kane standing? And it was strange because they weren't showing it on the screens, but all they were showing on the screens was that there's a possibility, or it's being checked by VAR. And I just kept thinking, And it was actually, like, I think a period of about 3 or 4 minutes, which, I mean, in terms of VAR time, I've always thought if it takes that long, it's generally often thought to be too indiscriminate for it to be clear and obvious.
Yep. Yeah.
So in my head, I was just like, this is too long. This has got to be a goal. And lo and behold, referee ruled it. And just the mood was it was pretty somber, to be honest with you, after that.
And now you've seen it back. What do you make of it now? So there's so much wrong with the check. It's actually unreal.
It's very strange because, firstly, I thought, okay, maybe Emerson was offside. I saw that he wasn't offside. Then I thought, okay, Emerson's header to Kane. Kane technically looked like he was behind, but then I was worried in my head initially when I saw the replay. I was like, oh, Kane can't be offside because when Emerson headed it, it hit the defender, which I thought completely nullifies Kane's position. But then I realised that the ruling is actually, it's irrespective of it hitting the defender does not reset the situation, because if he heads it down to Kane,
it wasn't a purposeful action.
Yeah, it could be, because it wasn't a purposeful action back to the goalkeeper or back in the goal, in the direction of the goal, then it wouldn't reset it. So I was thinking then, how would it be offside? But then I was looking at the line that they set. And it's funny as well, because the line where they set Emerson is actually on Emerson's inside foot, not his outside foot, which I didn't really...
They put it from his head, I think.
There's
a whole half of his body, which
body,
is...
Body, that's on the other side of the line, yeah.
Yes.
And then obviously they showed us the angle from basically, I don't know, what would be the south, north, south. What would be the west stand? But then the angle that they've shown, they've not actually shown us like flush. And obviously, as a result, they've now, like, as a result of today, we've now seen some pictures where we've seen, like, literally almost looking like from a bird's eye view, that you can see that actually it looks like the defender's foot's actually in line or in front of Kane's, which
it's ridiculous,
which is strange.
And that's another thing. I was watching, I think it was the highlights of the Liverpool game. And then I remembered that we've got this semi-automatic offside system now, I don't believe we use. It's that system where they kind of turn plays into cartoons. Have a line there without any fudgy camera angles.
Yeah.
And then there it would have picked up that Kane he looked level with the ball, to be honest, which if anything, he was behind it. He's definitely not ahead of the ball.
This is my issue with VAR at the moment as well, is that, like, I need them to, first of all, why isn't it clear? Why isn't that, like, this new schematic where they're using images or cartoon type style to represent play? Why isn't that, like, used all the time? Is it only used for specific things? And then the second thing is that, like, it would be good as well for them to explain that VAR decision as well, because I don't know. I felt like it was such a negligible amount for it to be ruled out. And sometimes I think you can even try and give you can try and give attackers a little bit of leeway or a bit of an advantage. But I don't know. I just felt that the decision was taken was far too long for them to be like, this is clear and obvious. And if that was the case, why would it be given as an offside goal? I don't know. It was very, very, I think it was very, very harsh. But in the rules of offside, in the rules or the way that they've been using VAR, yeah, by the letter of the law.
I don't even know. Because, like, by the letter of the law, like, when you're drawing lines on Emerson's head instead of, like, the furthest part, the
furthest
of his body,
part of his body, you know? You understand why is that not, why is that not being used? I don't know.
I don't know. It's very strange. And then obviously the image that came out, which showed the defender's foot level with Kane's, if not, like you say, in front of Kane's, it was all weird. The check was just, it was bad.
And it's super frustrating. I mean, like.
And then Conte getting sent off at the end for which looked unclear. It didn't even look like he was outright shouting at the ref either. He just kind of. Got singled out.
All of his post-match interview pressers, they were just flagrant.
He walked out the press conference after one question. He was very upset, bless him.
And that's gutting as well, because like I think I've seen somewhere today that he's completely going to be out of the loop for the game against Marseille at the Velodrome, whereby he can't have any contact with the players in the changing room, before or after, on the touchline, nothing. Like, so
we might see some quicker subs. Who knows?
So it's going to be an interesting one.
Well, chaos ball indeed. It feels very unfortunate, but yeah, we'll move on. Got a game against Bournemouth away to rectify. I've got obviously the Marseille game, which follows that. So I guess we'll do two quick predictions for that. And what would your brief prediction be for a Bournemouth game in which you would probably expect to see a bit of rotation?
I expect nothing but a Spurs win. I expect nothing but a Spurs win. I feel like they've had a little bit of resurgence under Gary O'Neill. Some interesting results. I thought they were very hard done by on Monday night against West Ham. Again, VAR completely fucking up that match. I think they recently lost to Saints at home, and they had a really interesting game where they beat Leicester a couple of weeks back, and they seem to be playing a lot better than when Scott Parker was there. And obviously they've turned it around, obviously, since that early sort of smashing they got from Liverpool. But I just feel, again, this is a team who I don't think are particularly of any real quality. I feel like, you know, there seems to be a bit of a resurgence in Dom Solanke, and they've got a tall, left-footed midfielder who seems to be scoring goals from time to time.
Billings,
yeah. But, I mean, I'm looking at their squad and looking at their results and how they've kind of got on. You know, this should be a game that we should, in a similar kind of way like we did against Brighton earlier this season, a similar way that we did against Nottingham Forest, get an early goal, quiet the crowd down, slow them down, and just take your points and just fuck off back to London, to be honest. So I'm not really looking like, you know, I've been very clear about how I see this first sort of half of the season. Just get as many points as you can on the board before the World Cup, and see where your chips land when it comes to January.
For sure.
This is the kind of game that we just want to get them in, finish, refresh, and start thinking about Tuesday in Marseille.
So it kind of feels like we are limping to this World Cup break at the moment, just trying to get there and then get a chance to reset once it's all said and done.
Mm-hmm.
Given our recent performances away from home and that we're probably going to rotate the team, I'm not that confident, even though I do expect us to win. I think we should definitely win. Especially given our away performance against Brighton, like it being good enough to win. Like Brighton are much better than Bournemouth. I couldn't really say who's actually going to get rotated. I'd expect Bissouma to start. I would like to see Hill start, but I just don't think it will happen.
I personally don't think it will either.
Ben Davis will probably come back in. Not sure on Romero. Romero had a funny game against Sporting, although I actually loved his runs forward constantly. Like he was slow to get back at times. That crunching tackle he did on one of the players, where he just two-footed him, even though the ball was literally right there, gets the fans going. Hopefully he's willing enough to start both Bournemouth and Marseille games, because we rely on him for a build up on that right hand side so much. Like I just don't think I can see Sanchez there again. If we're gonna rotate, then try Tanganga. Like I know he's not necessarily match fit, but he just is better on the ball. I can't see Emerson. Like I know it's inevitable, but I just cannot see Emerson start. It's so,
you know, some people in the group, you know, they speak about some of his qualities and some of his dribble stats and some of his defensive attributes. But honestly, this is a player who you know, this is where possession goes to die. You're not gonna get anything from this guy on this right hand side, in my opinion. That is a possession black hole.
And he needs someone out on that right hand side to hold his hand for me. Someone like a Kulusevski.
Do you know what, Owen? I've been thinking like deeply about this. I don't know if Kulusevski coming back fixes this. You know, this is a bigger sort of thought process I'm having. But I just feel that we're just in a rut, confidence wise. Tactically, like formation wise, everything just feels like you said, we're just limping to this World Cup. Nothing feels right at the moment, you know.
Do you feel like the novelty of Conte and him coming in has started to wear off already?
I can feel in a way why this would appear to feel this way, because if you think about it, this is a very, if we're going to be honest, this is kind of a rigid sort of formation where everything kind of has to be absolutely right. Players can't be passing into blind alleys. They're passing into areas that they would have practiced and trained and combined frequently, consistently to do so. So in many ways, there's probably going to be quite a bit of repetition. So I can kind of see why one that would probably look to maybe frustrate people or maybe bore people. But the one thing that I take from this is that this is a style of play that has been successful, not just in the past for Conte, but actually in the past for Spurs. So the fact that this could potentially wane on people, even not even a year into his time at Spurs, I would say no, I think it's too early. I think we're actually underestimating the effect of fatigue at this point. You know, we're literally playing players 60, 70 minutes, 2-3 times a week. Players like Kane and Son aren't even been able to get rests. Dyer, not really been able to get rests. Bentancur, not really been able to get rests. So I kind of feel that plays a bit of a part into it as well. But I also feel as well is that, like, in my opinion, last season, whilst we were a bit of an unknown quantity in that style, teams have seen how they can get the better out of us. And I feel that they are setting up and preparing just a lot more pragmatically to deal with that ability. And that is also why, in many respects, I think it's important that Kulusevski comes back, because in that front three, he is actually the unpredictable nature of those front three, in my opinion. But also, like you said, it's weird because if he comes back, he's the kind of player that would need or has the ability to hold Emerson's hand. So he would kind of maybe help Emerson, maybe not help Emerson. I can't really say. And he hasn't played enough this season for me to even feel like, okay, this is the solution to our problems, you know?
Yeah, I hear it. That was a very good detailed explanation there. Yeah, for me, I feel like we need at least probably new additions to freshen up. Not necessarily saying we need to go like crazy in the January market, but
yeah.
I just feel like the team's screaming out for at least two or three more creative type players, or players who are just more technically sound. So, see someone who can be more creative, London. At right wing back, especially in an attack minded midfielder, and an extra attacker to replace Lucas Moura, who can actually get his head up and make a correct decision. For me, those are holes in our squad which need to be addressed. This, it's weird hearing the rumours about Spence going out on loan in January. Like, for me, it seems really, really pointless to it, not at least give him more minutes in his Spurs shirt before making that decision, if even true. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens on that one.
At this point, I kind of feel sorry for the lad. I really do, just because you can't fault him. He's in.
No, I was just thinking that as well. You actually can't.
You know, he's been in most matchday squads. You know, some kids would kick up a fuss. Their heads would drop. They wouldn't give a shit. They probably wouldn't even train as hard. They'd probably just be of the mindset, I'd collect my wage and just keep it stepping. But he looks to me as someone who's just been professional. And to not even be given the opportunity to prove himself, to show that he's got the ability to step in, even to do a good job. Like, I've always been an advocate for young players. Always give advocate for young players. You will only know they are ready if you give them a chance. And generally, most young players either sink or swim. They generally sink or swim. So you give them the opportunity. You have so many good young players across the league. You know, he who shall not be named at United came into the league. Rashford came into the league. Saka came into the league really young. ESR, Mount, Rice, lots of young players come into the league as unknown quantities. Fine, they maybe would have been on loan elsewhere, but generally you come into the league and you sink or swim. And that's only because you're given the opportunity. He literally hasn't even been given the opportunity. And fine. People are going to say he's young. Conte probably doesn't rate him. I don't see how right now we can sit here and say he wouldn't or potentially could not be a better option than Emerson. It feels to me that, like, by him continuing to pick Emerson and not even give Spence a chance, it feels like gross negligence. He knows that Emerson will hurt us, but he would rather have that than even give Spence a chance, which I just don't get.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, you can tell, like, straight away, you know Spence is going to offer us more on the ball. And I feel like he just continues with Emerson purely because, I mean, to his credit, slightly off the ball, he's more often than not in the right position at the right time.
If anything, he's more measured, if anything. As, like, because, you know, you get these marauding sort of wing backs who want to get forward, and maybe they are not as good on the defensive side. At least to some regards, you know, we're going to get from Moura defensively. He's not really going to give you that much going forward, but 9 times out of 10, he's going to be in this position where he needs to be, at right wing back from a defensive perspective. And maybe that's where Conte sees that he would be best place to start. But then again, I also feel like, at least if you give Spence a chance and he sinks, doesn't perform, then at least you know. You know, for you to then potentially buy this player for however much you buy him for, and then to loan him, what if he goes to another team and he just flies? Like, just it would look so stupid. It would look so stupid, you know?
I have a feeling that would happen as well. It was just a quick thought as well. No, it's just a little bit off topic, but have we ever seen the Kulusevski, Kane and Richarlison front three line up for us yet?
Not this season, no. Richarlison only played, excuse me, Kulusevski only played in the first three games. He started in one and he was subbed in two, and then he was injured, yeah.
Mate, I'm trying to think back to pre-season, but yeah, I need to see that at some point this season, because obviously I know Son's gone off the ball. Maybe fatigue is even a part of it.
Oh, man, less said about that, Don, the better.
Yeah, I know there's been rumours about him leaving or wanting to leave Real Madrid, but I don't see anyone coming in for him now.
What? He's gonna leave Spurs to go sit on the bench.
Probably.
Fair play, man. Fair play. If that's what he's on, that's what he's on, man. At this point, I'm conflicted. Son is a goal machine. Given the opportunity, he scores goals. I have absolutely no faith in this guy's passing ability. No faith in this guy's build-up play. The one thing that even that has been highlighted to me recently is this guy's ability to just be there in a physical respect. He doesn't even do that. He's such a pussy. Like, he is such a bitch when it comes to getting into physical duels. And from this point, I just can't see how he continually stays in the team if he's not scoring. That's the one thing that he actually used to bring to the team. And if he's not scoring, then what? But then I'm like, okay, if he's not playing, who do we play? But at this point, I'm not done with him. No. I just, you know, you guys know how I feel about Son at this point. I can't even say that he's had like an okay-ish portion of the season, because outside of his performance against Leicester, the guy's been utter garbage. He's been rubbish. I mean, there's no other way to describe how he's performed this season. Guy's been rubbish. Simple. I'm not even going to say good. I'm not even going to say all right. He's been rubbish. So many important games that we've played where we need this guy to stand up and be counted as a key attacker in this team just goes missing. Completely goes missing. Can I get his ability to get him behind? No. Can he beat a man like he used to be able to do? No. Can he dribble at a decent rate? No. Can he make the right decision in the final third again? No. Can he build up play? No. Can he pass properly in the final third? No. All of these things
he used to be able to do as well. I'm not seeing things. It's just so easy to get.
I think Sai said it recently, I think on a pod, he just said that it's weird with Son because he has the ability to do all these things. But it's so strange that when he doesn't do these things, it's like he can't do them to any level at all. There's like no in between. It's either he does them to an extremely high standard or he plays like he doesn't know how to play football. It's so strange to me. And at this point, I don't even know, man. Like, I was watching him last night again on a personal thing, trying to see what runs he was making. The guy's taking the ball in areas that he clearly is not comfortable in. He's not good at build-up. So why are you taking it with your back to goal with two, three guys around you? You're not a dribbler. You're not someone who has the ability to make those quick passes. I want you to be on the turn, trying to get him behind, on the wing, dribbling at people. Things that he's good at, he's not doing any of that.
Just going back to the basics.
Yeah. For him and for me, I've just not... Yeah, people can be in bad form. But for him, it's just been too long now. I just don't see how he turns this round. I don't know.
All right. Yeah, I guess that will pretty much sum up tonight's podcast. Obviously, just a quick prediction of the Marseille game as well. Come on, Owen.
I'm not confident. You know how this goes, mate. Like, let's be honest. Any important game, any final, match, any match...
We only need to draw, though, don't we?
Real importance. Owen. we only need a draw. You know how this goes. We get packed, mate. We get packed. We'll just fall apart. Get packed.
Yeah, it's typical, because... I don't think Marseille are that good of a side, but then you see the amount of ex-Arsenal players they've got as well. It feels a bit inevitable.
All I need is my. All I need is
Sanchez.
You know, like
there's another one.
Eric Bailly, Payet. Like there's players who I don't think are like amazing, but given the opportunity to stick one on Spurs, yeah, why not?
Yeah, okay.
In a very fiery velodrome, where we're going to have a limited amount of away fans in a game.
They haven't been winning there in the league this season, apparently.
They haven't been.
Actually, double check the results, but.
Oh, we're getting packed.
And that's that. I've said that though as well. So
we're definitely getting packed.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, again, Booker T, thank you for joining me tonight. Your nuance and the way you were breaking down our games was almost second to none. Brilliant. It's great to have you on.
Always, mate. Always.
We usually look to stream again every Thursday. Audio form comes out every Saturday morning. And that'll wrap up this part overshadowed by fucking narc VAR referees and just a poor run at the moment. But yeah, please join us for further pain next week because it feels a little bit inevitable. All right. On behalf of the new Spurs order, peace.
Peace.
On debut, Tunde Ondombele has scored the equaliser for Spurs. Lucas Moura clips it. Oh, great goal! Stephen Bergwijn has arrived in North London. That is absolutely incredible on debut. Aurier!
Sports Social Podcast Network.